D72 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 391, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallisch. I'm joined today by Tim Bauermeister from Real PC Repair. Hey, welcome to the show, Tim.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
I am doing excellent. It is a great day to be in the computer repair business. I am still convinced of that.
I am, too. It's probably a really great hour to be in it because you've got me offline. So.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Yeah, this is the highlight of my day. I was actually able to sit back and relax a little bit and talk to another computer repair tech and just enjoy the time that we can, you know, talk about what we do in our businesses. Hey, you know, I don't know if you did this the last time you were on Podnuts. I'll also mention that Tim is also one of the co-hosts on The Geeksters. So if you're familiar with his voice, that's probably where you've heard him before. And great show. I was on there, I think it was last week, and we had a great time. So,
yeah, we have fun on there. Anybody that's not familiar with it, it's, you know, we just talk about whatever's going on news or whatever we're working on at the time. We have great guests on. I mean, last week was okay, but we have some fantastic people that come on the show, and it's an honor for me to be there because I'm with, you know, Martin and Mitch, and they're fantastic. I just feel like I sit back and just really enjoy some friends. And so anybody that does listen to it, I hope that you agree, but anybody, if you haven't heard it yet, please check it out because we just have a lot of fun over there. So, and I really appreciate the opportunity to come on here. Jeff, you're doing a great job with Podnuts. It's, that really brought a lot of energy into this podcast, and I enjoy listening to it as a fan again. So not again still, but just having new episodes, it's great.
Right. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I enjoy talking to other techs and finding out what they're doing in their businesses that can, you know, help somebody else out. And that's really what it's all about, the community of, you know, helping each other out. Hey, why don't you get started? Why don't you tell us a little bit about how did you actually get started in computer repair?
Yeah. Computers are really a first love for me. I think that I got into it just about probably in the same way I think almost all of our listeners do. It's just something you always did as a kid. It's just always been kind of been a passion. But as you grow up, you find other things. If it's sports, you know, working on the cars, girls, you know, everything else kind of comes along. And then, you know, I was off to school. I found, you know, all these other different things that I wanted to do. And then, but I was always like doing that also, like in the background. So I was fixing computers for family. I was fixing computers for friends. You know, it's just one of those things you could always kind of do as a hobby. And so, you find yourself busy doing it. And, oh, gosh, I don't even remember when it was, I don't know, 6-7 years ago or whatever, that I found myself out of work, and I started doing more and more this kind of thing. And my wife said, you know, just go do it. Just do this. And so I started my own business, and it actually, I mean, that time in my life coincided with Podnuts, and I had just kind of discovered you know, podcasts. I had a lot of free time all of a sudden.
Right.
So I was listening to a lot of podcasts, and I discovered Steve, man. He's like, well, I'm just going to talk about, like, you know, starting my own computer business and the things I'm fixing. And I'm like, man, that's what I'm doing too. And so I'm listening, and it was like, it really, like, it just meshed up perfectly our timelines. And so that was really fantastic to have. I was like living the same life at the same time. Now, of course, he went on to great, great success, and I'm kind of still where I'm at. But he shared like a lot of stuff that solved problems I was having at the time, and I actually became active in the forums, and so I could kind of give some of that back. And so, really, that's to answer your question. That's what it was. So I always I've spent my entire life fixing things. This is just a season of my life where I'm fixing, you know, computers, and I actually do a lot of device repair, cell phones, tablets, and it used to be a lot of MP3 players, that sort of thing. But that's kind of fallen away. That's,
right.
it's interesting with hardware. I'm really a hardware guy first. It's just my passion, and so it's interesting how devices, the things we use and the names, they kind of come and go. Where, gosh, could you ever imagine a time where people wouldn't be holding an MP3 player? I mean, it was. I remember when they first came in, I was like, wow, that you have an MP3 player. Well, now it's like, why are you doing that? I mean, we have, it's kind of been superseded by other things that we carry. And so it's all kind of gone back to the phone. There was a time when you would laugh at people wearing a watch, you know.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But now that's kind of where it's all going back to, isn't it? That it'll just all be Dick Tracy style. Everything will just be in the watch.
No, you will not get me wearing a watch. But you know,
we got you. We got a recording with you saying that.
It will not happen. Yeah. But one of the things you're right, because I remember, you know, going to work and doing different things, and I would carry my MP3 device, which was a Zune at the time, in my phone. You know, I had a cell phone, and then it's like, you've got all these different devices and all these different holsters you got to hold things in or your pockets. And now you get to the point where you can basically, I have a phone that is a phone that I never use as a phone. And it's an MP3 player. It's a camera. It does everything all in one. And it's got a 64 gigs of memory outside of the 16 gigs that came on it. And I've got my whole music collection on here. I've got all my podcasts. I've got everything that I need all in one little pocketable device. And that to me is beautiful.
Yeah. And I think it's important to say that we finally got these things to where they do most of those things pretty well.
Yes.
You know, new technology comes out, and I think I think we're quick to say, wow, it does all these things, but it's like, I don't know. It does most of them like okay or kind of okay. Right. I think we're finally where it does most of those things pretty darn well. I don't have to carry my MP3 player. I don't have to carry a different phone. I have to carry a camera. It's like, but the sound quality, sound, battery life. You know, there is a couple of years where I have a lot of really bad pictures where I just quit carrying a camera.
Right. Sure. Oh yeah. That happens.
But yeah, the phones, it's pretty amazing. What they're capable of, especially picture quality is way up.
Yeah, you know, like you said, it's not the best. You could still get a point and shoot, or, you know, if you really wanted to go, you know, big, you could get a digital SLR or whatever. And of course, they take beautiful pictures. Digital SLR, you've got to learn how to use it properly, or your pictures will still suck anyways. And then a point and shoot is great. It's better than the camera on your phone, but you've got to have it with you. And how many people are actually carrying those when you're out and about? Everybody is always carrying right. their phone. So that makes it a big deal. So you talked about device repair, and I'm curious about that because I get calls all the time asking me about, you know, either phone repairs, tablets. And matter of fact, I just had one for a Kindle the other day and, no, yesterday, as a matter of fact. And I basically right now I turn them all down. Yeah. I tear into a laptop and I'll fix laptops. But so what types of device repair do you do and how do you go about it?
You know what? That's one of those things. It's pretty specialized, and you have to love it to get started, because I'm fortunate that I have a couple friends that I know that have been very very generous with information. I mean, that's, if you want to do it, you either got to, excuse me. Anything in this repair business, if you're going to go on your own and figure it out, you have to love it and be willing to take a few lumps, or you have to know some people who are going to help you out that already have a lot of this information. Of course, that's what Podnuts is. It's all about sharing this information. And that's what made fixing laptops initially so easy for me, because, you know, listening along with Steve and everybody else that was doing it, I didn't have to learn a lot of things the hard way. This device repair is a lot like that, just because there aren't very many people doing it. And the ones that are a little tight-lipped. And so you can learn a lot by going on YouTube and that. However, I can guarantee you that 99% of them are videos made by people selling things, new screens or whatever.
Right.
And every one of those videos is a complete lie.
Okay.
They're like, okay, so you buy a screen and the little tools and they show like these little plastic tools and it's just like do, 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 and the whole thing just like blows apart into 100 pieces. And they're like, isn't that easy? And it's not the way it happens at all.
Right.
Like they're taking apart something that's already been apart. You know, you get these things in front of you and they're literally like glued together with liquid nail. And
right.
And so you can find yourself discouraged very, very quickly. And so, I mean, that's the first tip I'll give you is that those videos, I mean, they're very, very handy to see how it is the thing is fastened together. And generally, if it's glued together and this is your first experience, my pro tip is just avoid it. Unless you have one that's already smashed and you can practice on it, because then you can see how it comes apart. These things are I don't remember. Was the question just how I got into it or how someone else should get into it?
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, okay, so when we're talking about tablets or phone repair, I mean, obviously, you know, there's a lot of us that still, you know, we do the laptop repair and stuff like that. But when it comes to tablets and phones, do you stick with the iDevices or are you doing, Samsungs and all the Android devices and different things out?
Okay. So, I will answer that question. I guess I wanted to say real first is that I was fixing desktops forever, but then we had the laptops. And so everybody was a little fearful to tear into the laptops. And so, which I enjoyed. And so we did the laptops and these devices, I feel like I'm doing the same thing I've always done. It's just gotten smaller and smaller and smaller. But we're at the point now where it's really like watch repair. And so where, a really fine watch is something you're going to be able to disassemble. A cheap thing that's mass produced is going to be a plastic thing that's glued together.
Right.
That's something you throw away. And that's kind of where we're at with these devices. Many of them are just glued together. They're engineered in such a way to be disposed of and replaced, not fixed. There are many devices that are actually assembled. They're screwed together. Those are devices that were engineered in such a way to be repaired. And so you have to know which one you're working with. Most of the phones, I'll say, are devices that are actually screwed together. They're assembled. They're engineered in such a way to be disassembled and repaired. Many of the MP3 players, the iPods and all these are devices that are glued together. They're engineered right. to be replaced, disposed of and replaced entirely. The tablets are somewhere in between. So the iPads and that, generally they are glued together. There are ways to disassemble them. It's just that, to replace something as simple as a battery, it shows you what you're thinking about these. When to replace the battery, you know, you have to go through a lot. You have to disassemble all these glued together components, like the screen from the case. You have to go through all this. And the battery is literally like the last thing you get to.
Right.
You know, that tells you that this is not something that they were expecting you to fix. It's a battery, for crying out loud. That used to be like in your mind, that was always like the thing that was the easiest to get to.
Right. Right.
Because you have to replace the batteries. That's what happens eventually. So a lot of the Android tablets though, they just snap together. You know, you snap the back off and you can start taking screws out. So, that's kind of where we're at. You kind of got to know what you're working with. I would recommend you know, the things that are not screwed, snapped together. I mean, that's really level two, level or tier two, tier three kind of stuff. If starting out, if I'd had a few to practice on, that would have been great. And then what I've known, I've made a few mistakes trying to fix things that I shouldn't have bothered with. And it didn't turn out well for me or the customer. But that's just kind of how you learn these things sometimes.
How do you make that choice when somebody calls and says, "Hey, I've got a tablet to be fixed," of whether or not you're going to attempt to even, do you just look at it, or do you kind of, what do you do? Do you Google it to see what type of tablet it is, how it comes apart, that type of thing, to know whether or not you're going to handle that, or you're going to go, "No, I don't work on that."
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's just from experience. I know what I do and what I don't do.
Okay,
if you don't, the way you handle that is, Let me check on what I charge to do that, and I'll call you back. Right? I mean, that's like, it's kind of how you kind of weasel out of that a little bit, and then you real quickly look at it. Actually, my first rule is don't practice on anything that belongs to a customer. And so when I take work, it's something that I feel comfortable in what I'm doing and how I do it. If I don't know, this is all computer repair. Anything that I can do, if I could kind of practice on my own stuff first, I will. And practice means doing something that you don't necessarily have to do, but you choose to do just for your own experience, and you run the risk of damaging somebody's stuff. A lot of things you do in computer repair, the first time you do it, however, it's closely resembles something else you've done in the past, so you kind of know what you're doing. But I never practice on anybody else's stuff. But if I got a job coming in, now I'm kind of in a unique position where I actually have a partnership with a local Verizon store. It's like 2 miles away. And so he will call me and he says, "Hey, I had a call about this." And so he works as an intermediary in a lot of this stuff. So somebody says, "Hey, I've got this. Can you fix it? How much?" And then he says, "Well, let me get with the tech guy." So he calls me and he says, "I'm getting a call about this. What do we charge to do that?" And then I'll get back with him. I'll say, "You know what?" Or I'll just say with text, "It's this much. This is what we charge to do this." Because we get really routine things. We get it. It's always iPhones, and that's about it.
Okay.
That's the stuff that's coming up from the store. I think that I don't know how many of one he sells over the other, but it seems the stuff that broken coming in, it's 95% iPhones, and I would say probably 80% of it is screens. We get damaged charging ports, the back is broken, or it was dropped into water. But generally it's screens. And so, he just calls and says, "I got one come in, and, I'll go down and grab it and fix it." And then that's it. But, we do get calls about more unusual things. Now the iPhones, they're pretty fantastic because, they're all pretty standard. So of all the gazillions of iPhones ever sold, if you have, an iPhone, four, there's only, I think there's only like four different screens that could possibly go into it. Or if it's a 4S, doesn't matter who sold it or when sold it. If it was a 4S, generally it's only going to take like this. It's like, the question is it white or black? I mean, that's what you need to know. Now, if it's, with the Android phones, this is where you start feeling the pinch of the Microsoft model, where, we provide this, but then a different hardware company supplies that. And so you have all these millions of different options. The Android phones are a real issue just because there's so many different variations on it that it turns into a real supply-demand issue. And the prices just skyrocket to the point where very often it's not it's not possible to fix them. It's just too expensive. And so, you know, the parts could be had very inexpensively for the iOS phones, but the Android, usually by the time the screens are inexpensive enough to make sense doing it, you know, the phone's a few years old and it's time to replace anyway.
Right. That's kind of what I've heard in the past, is that most of the time the parts are so expensive for the Android phones that it's just not worth doing it. And they all come apart so differently and in so many different ways. And I never heard that before, but what you said about the different parts, that makes a lot of sense. And that's why I think a lot of people have shied away from that. But the iPhones are the same. Whatever, you know, whatever next generation comes out, that's what it is. And so with that, you're able to get the parts are standard. And how to take it apart is standard after a point. They say some are easier, some are a little bit harder. But, you know, once you figure it out, you can pretty much do them.
Yeah. The iPhone 4, I believe that was offered AT&T first and then later on Verizon. And so there are a few more options there as to whether it's a CDMA phone or if it's a GSM phone. But once again, it's like you figure that out. Is it white or is it black? And then with the iPhone 4S, that was I want to make sure. I'm pretty sure I'm thinking now that they do use the same screens. And so, yeah, I get a call. It's like, is it white or it's black? They tell you there's just two options. And of course, with iPhone 5, it's the same deal. And, there's no difference between the CDMA and the GSM phones. With the iPhone 5, the major improvement there was that the screen is actually one of the first things it disassembles from the case. And so the iPhone 4, the screen is literally the very last, it's almost like the very last thing you remove from the case. And so you're looking at a complete disassembly, which the first couple you do, this is pretty outdated information, I suppose, but it's, if you were to do one, the first couple are kind of tough, but after that, it's just, it's all very routine. And I find it's just extremely relaxing, you know, it's just you and it, and, you know, no ringing phones and no people. It's just you against it. And so I really enjoy it.
No, that's pretty cool. So now do you order a bunch of screens in bulk or do you just order them as you need them? How do you take care of that stuff?
Yeah, I always try and have, you know, 5 or 10 on hand.
Okay.
I'm not doing a great volume of those. I suppose that if I was really push those, especially if I was working more with the Verizon store to really expand that, could probably be doing some really mad business. But it's just right now that component's just kind of where it's at. So yeah, I always try and keep enough on hand and order some more when I anticipate those getting lower, and same with the air things, you know, all the little, you know, I have a couple, I don't replace a lot of batteries, but if I do, I need to have, those on hand. That's, if you're only doing a few here and there, that's, I wouldn't stock any parts, maybe a screen or two if you expect to do another one eventually. But the problem is that how do you test them? You know, by the time it's set on your shelf for a couple months and you find it's no good, it's too late to send it back. So,
right.
For the longest time, I was doing okay by just ordering parts as I needed them.
Okay. No, that's good to know. Yeah, because I think a lot of people want to know, you know, should I have a bunch of parts on hand? The other thing I've always heard too, when you're ordering screens, is that make sure you always have two. Because if you break one, it's probably a good idea to have another one, so you don't have to wait another 3 or 4 days to get that, you know, next part.
That's actually a very good point. And what I was doing was I found a couple places that I thought were doing okay sending me parts, and I would order one from each, and usually one would arrive a day sooner than the other.
Okay.
So I not only had two screens, but I could usually get one a little, on average, I was getting one sooner than, you know, just ordering from one place. So,
and then you're getting from two different vendors. So you're hoping that, you know, one of those screens is going to be good if, you know, if not both.
Yeah. And I never really had an issue with, very rarely really was I getting bad parts, that they were usually good. Anyway, I never really had a problem with shit with things being damaged, shipped. So, I always kind of like playing those odds that if I could order two things that I would order from different sources and
okay,
I turn into a little horse race.
You can get it here first.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, you never know. I mean, you know, ordering one from Florida and one from California, all you need is one derailment somewhere or some river that's flooded over there. And, you know, your thing's caught in shipping for 2 days, 3 days or something. So, ordering from two different places, it's always actually, it's been a successful strategy for me.
Yeah. One of the things I do when I'm ordering off eBay is I always try to order from, you're either going to, as somebody that's in the Philadelphia area or the New York area. And because I live in Michigan, so both of those are fairly close to me that I can usually get the part within a day or two a lot of times, even if it's free shipping.
Yeah.
Because they put it in a box, even if it's regular postal service, it doesn't take that long. California is probably my third because that's where a lot of parts come from. But I try to stay on the East Coast when I'm ordering stuff. I try not to order from too far down south and stuff like that. And that seems to have worked out good for me over time. So
I like that sorting option of a distance first. That's such a handy because, you know, I was actually going to you're sorting by, you know, most relevant or the price plus shipping. That's nice. But I love that sorting option. It's like, show me what's nearest first.
Right.
And so, you know, a part that's $6, I mean, I would never like look in the $7 to $8 range because that's usually three pages away. Right.
Right.
But you do nearest first and it's like, son of a gun. There's a guy that's like 50 miles away that has it for $9. Right. It's like, well, yeah, that maybe it's 40% more. Right. Which is crazy. But it's like, well, crap, you know, I could probably drive and I could drive and punch him in the face if I get it. It's no good, right? You know, go give him a poke in the eye. But it's like, oh, great, you know, this is great. And so, you know, I order from him, and maybe it's just a one off that he had or something, but whatever it is. But that's, I love that soaring option. That's like, you know, there's actually somebody over here that it finds those relevant results that you wouldn't have found otherwise. So,
well, I think one of the other things too is when I order parts, I'm ordering, my service, if you bring it to me, my service is not, you know, the fastest service. I mean, I get it done usually in 4 days or less, which is pretty good for an ordered part. But a lot of times, like when I'm doing a power jack repair or whatever, what I'll do is I will order the part and I'll actually pay the extra $6. You know, the part might be $12. I'll pay the extra $6 because, to be honest with you, I'm charging $125 anyways for a power jack repair. And, you know, the extra $6, what's that? So $18, I'm still making a very nice profit on a power jack repair. So it's, and the customer gets it back a little bit quicker. I get it done a little quicker, you know, a little quicker. It's not sitting in my shop. It helps sometimes to pay that little bit extra just to get, you know, get it to you quicker.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, those power jacks, that's something else that I always order two of. If it's something kind of a new, some of them that are really standard, I just keep, you know, a handful on, a handful here. And I have those little like plastic things that maybe you take fishing that they have all the little sorted bins in them.
Yeah.
The snap case, you know, the little compartments.
Yep.
You know, those are great for keeping all the little bits of little things like that in. And so, you know, I always order a handful. And then it's always like a big win when you need something like that. And it's like, oh, I actually have one on hand and I could just do it. That's always like liberating than having to wait 3 days, something sit on your bench. And you're staring at it. It's staring back at you, just getting mad. You just want to fix. You want to go. So, but yeah, if it's one of those where it has, you know, the little pigtail on it and you got to order something special, yeah, I always order they're usually so cheap. It's like, just order a second one and then you have it. Maybe next time, you can feel like you're a real genius because you have one here and you can just send it. Just fix it and send it.
Yep. Yeah. You know, Toshiba's, is a lot of the ones I get around here. So you can order, I think there's like two standard versions for most Toshiba laptops, and they're all, you know, like you said, the pigtails you plug into the motherboard, not a big deal. So I always order a couple of those. And then, so the second guy that brings it to me or second person or whatever, they get it fixed a little bit quicker because I have it. Not always, because like I said, there's like two main ones. So if you have the wrong one, you've got a different Toshiba, it doesn't matter. Right. But
well, yeah, what are you going to do? And they should all be like that with just pigtails. Just that's a part that they know that's the part that's going to go bad. You know, it's going to be the battery. It's going to be,
I know,
it's going to be the power jack. You know, it's a wear item. Just plain and simple. It's a wear item. So don't solder it to the motherboard. Just don't do that. Let's just all agree just not to do that anymore.
I think the problem is the ones that are soldered to the motherboard are actually more robust as far as they take a little bit more damage unless you basically abuse them. I think the ones with the wires on them, they're basically they've got some electronics in them. Mm-hmm. And I think what I've found is that those things generally are going bad a lot quicker. And for no reason. It's like there's nothing wrong with the jack itself as far as the plugging. Everything's tight. Everything works. The electronic component inside, it just goes. It's like it corroded over time or something. I don't know.
That's a good point. That's true. Or they put like a little LED light around it, a lot of little cutesy crap.
Yep.
And also they physically the connection is a lot weaker, where it's just kind of snapped into a little couple plastic bits, and so they don't take abuse quite as well, you know. And actually, if I get one in where I feel like it's been a matter of abuse, I'll do the old Cherubino forever fix, where I just go up to Radio Shack and get one of those deals. That if these things are built now where there's not a lot of extra room, and that's the problem I'm getting into, where I don't have room to install this thing. But if you can, I mean, it's like the old jack that threads through, and you got like a big screw on the outside, a nut that just cranks down on the outside. And I mean, literally the entire laptop could be destroyed and you'd still have the power jack like intact with a chunk of case around it. I love doing that when I can. When customers get them back, they're thrilled because they know that they're never going to have to repair that again. So, and plus Radio Shack's right up the road. So if I can use replace with one of those, that's pretty fantastic, which I did recently with a Toshiba that had been dropped.
Yep. Yeah, you can either. Yeah, that's probably the better method. It doesn't look as good, but the functionality of it, it works so much better and it's so much more robust. The other thing I do is, along with those types of jacks that you can basically put on the inside and put a screw on the outside and keep it nice and tight, is a lot of times what's happened is you'll have your power adapter for the laptop and it has a straight pin coming out of it. So these people, they plug it in and then when they drop it, that pin gets bent or pushed, and that's what breaks the jack. So what I was doing with a lot of customers in the past is you go to Radio Shack and I get the little right angle power adapter, cut the power adapter cord, and cut the tip off and resolder the rewire it and resolder the tips on. So now you've got a right angle tip. So if you drop it, you're going to have less of a chance of that thing poking right into the computer. I don't understand why computer manufacturers make anything with a straight pin anymore. It doesn't make any sense.
It makes perfect
sense. Well, that's true. Okay.
That's the Henry Ford model.
Yep. Careful when, now.
I imagine that they still teach Henry Ford in Michigan schools, don't they?
I actually work for Ford, so.
Well, it's
So yeah, we've had to learn the history, you know, over the years.
Yeah, I mean, he would, you know, with the early Fords, he would pick through junkyards and he would find every component that was still good. And to him, that was over engineered. It was too well designed, and so that was something that it'd be. It needed less attention during, you know, production,
right,
and manufacturing, there's a little part of me that gets that, because it's like, if you actually are spending a lot of time manufacturing a part and then you go to the junkyard and you can see where it's still brand new. Okay, I get that. It's like, well, we don't have to spend that much time, so we can, you know, we can nickel and dime that a little bit.
Right.
But at the same time, I think that, I think that that's the way our things are engineered now, where it's like, we only want this thing to last 3 years. So, let's look at everything that might last three years in a day, and let's just make it as crappy as possible.
Right.
And I think that's where we're at now, where it's like, well, why would they make that like that? Because, you know, I've had it for 6 years and it's still perfectly functional, and now it's doing this. And it's like, well, you know, oh, it's lasted 6 years. Consider yourself lucky. Well, that's a horrible way. That's a horrible way to live with things.
Well, you know, and it's funny because I've told this story before. But I remember when CompUSA was actually a store years ago, I went in there and I was talking to a couple of sales guys and whatnot. And they basically told me that, basically, 30% of the stuff that came off the truck was DOA.
Wow.
Monitors, computers, keep whatever. 30% of the electronics that came off that truck was, you know, was dead on arrival. And I don't know if a lot of people know this, but do you know the difference between a Ford certified part and a Champion spark plug?
You mean Champion spark plugs used in as,
like, automobiles. So,
well, I think I understand what you're asking, but I know that as they roll off the same line, ones that meet certain specifications go, you know, are sold as OEM parts at the Ford dealership. And then the ones that meet only the basic criteria are sold still as Champion plugs, but at Kmart.
Similar. Yeah. It's something like, I'm a lot of people don't realize this, but basically when you're running a line and you have checks and balances on a line, so, you know, every 100 parts, let's say they pull a spark plug out and they check it. If they find a bad one, what they do is they strip the whole line, take those spark plugs, those all become Champion spark plugs, and they fix whatever the problem was. And then you restart again. So all the ones, so it's not necessarily, they're actually the same identical part, and it may or may not be better than a Champion spark plug, but that's how they do their checks and balances. The problem in any type of hobby industry or electronics industry, they're literally, because they're pumping out thousands and thousands of parts, there is nobody there checking and balancing these things. They're just running down a line. Some are going to be good, some are going to be bad, and they're all made so cheaply nowadays that there's no standards to keep up with. So it's just one of those things where you go, you're going to get junk parts every once in a while. And it is amazing that all the thousands of parts that they make, that they actually do work well. You know, I tell people this all the time. I'm like, if you have a hard drive and you can get past the first 2 years, that hard drive literally will last you 20 years. You'll throw it away, you know, you'll throw it away way long time before you ever need to do anything with it. But usually the hard drives that I find, when I'm looking at the dates on them, they're within 2 years.
Oh yeah.
You know, when they fail, and you're like going, really?
Yeah. If not 3 months.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Those are the ones that really, of course, at least if it's in 3 months, you can usually, the manufacturer usually takes care of that. But once you get past that year warranty, you're done.
Yeah.
and that's usually between 1 year and 2 years. That's that sweet spot where those hard drives fail. And I'm like, you know, they're in laptops, which are being moved around, jumbled in bags and stuff like that. So some of it's understandable, but, mm-hmm, you know,
sure,
it's still irritating. But it's the same token, it keeps us in business. So
I think that's probably the, you know, one thing about working with these digital things is that, you know, 30% seems like an awfully terribly high number. But at least it's a zero or one. It either works or it doesn't.
And right.
So, yeah. It's not like if you were to buy something, of course a car has got so many millions of bits to it, but you know, any kind of a mechanical thing where you can actually measure it as being in or out of range, by a monitor, it either works or it doesn't, or you can right. count the dead pixels. But a mechanical thing you get at home and it's like, it seems to work great, but you only think it does. And after a couple of years, you find that it works, but it just doesn't work very well.
Right.
At least a cell phone you buy, it's on or off. It works or it doesn't. And you know very quickly if it works, if there's problems with reception or any of these types of things.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's a good point. So going back to, now we've kind of gone off on a unique tangent there, but that was kind of cool. So as far as tablets, okay, so we talked about the cell phones. You're doing mostly the iPhones and stuff like that. As far as tablets, are you finding that you're able to fix some of the different tablets out there, the absolutely. Android tablets?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, because with those things, I don't do many screens with those.
Are they still expensive, the screens for those devices?
I don't know. I actually don't even know where the screens are at for the Android tablets. The iPads, there's two, I'm trying to think if it's across, I think it's all of them, but I'm not going to say that. I know in the ones that I've done recently, so my memory is no good for this sort of thing, that the digitizer is a separate component from the screen, the actual LCD screen. And so, okay. Where the LCD screen is okay, it's the actual digitizer that is, it's the glass that you're actually touching. And it's the digitizer is what actually transforms a clear piece of glass into actually a touch, that touch component. So,
right.
The digitizer is broken, and so you can disassemble, unglue the digitizer from the thing and replace. And generally that's a component that you can get relatively inexpensively. But I'll tell you that on the Android ones, the ones the component that fails the most often is the charging port, the little USB port.
Yeah, okay.
Because those are... they're just notoriously under-engineered. And in my mind, I really feel that four pin USB connector, that little mini USB connector, I think that's a mistake. I just don't think that it's I think that the old style Apple connector, I think that thing's just ridiculously big and silly. That connector, that USB connector we've gotten used to, I just don't think robust is the word you use. And I don't think that connector was ever designed to take the amount of abuse that it gets with these devices. I like the size and what it does, but those ports, I think that if you're going to have a failure between the power jack and the cord connecting to it, I think the failure should be, the weakest component should be the cord itself, but that's never the case.
Right.
It's always the power jack. So something needs to be done there.
Well, I think cell phone manufacturers, they're kind of in a bind because the U.S. government has mandated that they unify their, basically their connectors. And so that was what they had all decided to go with. Other than how Apple escapes the U.S. government when they're a U.S. company, I have no idea, but that's a whole nother thing.
They are the U.S. government.
Yeah, pretty much.
No.
So, on a phone, it almost makes sense. I haven't had too many problems with that, but in the tablets, it seems like you could make something much more robust, and even if it was universal, so that you're not getting... It's tough because, like you said, the little tiny, mini USB or micro USB ports are, four pin, and they're tiny.
Yeah. I mean, I like the connector, and I like the fact that it's been standardized. But just something, I don't know. It just needs something. We have to do something there. And with the tablets, it's usually a kid. And so, whereas as an adult, you would be more careful. I mean, the kids.
True.
I know that I've watched my kids. It's the connector is in the bottom, and they have the thing resting in the bottom of the tablet, and then it's resting like on their chest, or their stomach, as they're playing with it. And so, it's like I said, I'm just like, please stop doing that. Please stop doing that. And my head slowly just drops. And just about the time my forehead hits the table, they're like, Dad, it doesn't work anymore. I'm like, I told you, stop doing that. So, and of course, that's always a component that's it's soldered into the main board or some expensive little daughter board. It's like,
I put the connectors or the chargers, you know, like on counters and stuff like that. So if they ever run out of power and they want to use them, they actually have to sit up at a counter or a table and have the thing plugged in so they can, you know.
Well, you're a mean dad.
Yes, I am.
I'll tell you what, I think we lose on the order of 3 charging cables and USB cables a day. If I ever find all of these like power adapters that we've lost, they're probably with all of my socks.
Right.
All of my mismatched socks.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Oh, that's amazing. Well, that's good to know. So with the Android repair, you're doing a lot more digitizers. And so let me get this right. Is that basically the part that you're touching? So can you take that off from the front, or do you actually have to tear them all down?
On the iPads, it's the digitizers. I'm not seeing. Yeah. And so that's, yeah. Yeah. That's the thing where, you know, they're basically just glued to the front, and once you get it loose, and see, that's why I said my memory's so bad on these things. I have no memory whatsoever. I really don't. So I'm trying to think what I actually have one laying back here. Yeah. I don't know. It's gone AWOL, but yeah, it's it comes unglued. But I'm trying to think if. You have to take some more stuff loose to get to. Getting it apart and actually cleaning all of the old adhesive away, especially if it's broken, because then it's quite a project to remove all of the old adhesive with the glass. But once you get it apart and clean, it's not too big a deal after that.
Now, what are you using to clean the adhesive?
Physically, just little screwdrivers now, just to scrape it all away. Yeah. All right. I have a couple tools that I've made. I mean, I've got like an old toothbrush that, you know, I just cut the head off of it, but the end, I've sharpened the end of it. And this is like, it's a toothbrush. It's fairly flexible.
Okay.
So I like it. It's plastic, but I can keep a nice tip on it sharpened. Okay. And so I have that, and then I also have an old palette knife that's – I shouldn't say it's old. It's actually one of my favorite tools, but if you just go to any art supply store – and I think I might have mentioned this in the last show, but it's affectionately called a ray gauge for a guy that I knew that he just invented all kinds of little tools. But it's a palette knife and nice wooden handle. It's got a blade, I don't know, 2 or 3 inches long that, you know, I've cut it down and I've just kind of I wish I had it in front of me. But you find that with doing this, it's like, if you ever find yourself thinking, I don't have a tool to do that. If you can't order it, just make it. Okay.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We so often think, well, you know, I need to do this. Okay. And it's like, well, I guess I have to order a tool. Well, you don't have to order a tool. Just make one. Just look and see what you got laying around or what you can go down to. Walk around a hobby store. That's not something I do. I don't really care for craft stores and hobby stores. I don't like going into them. I don't like most of the people that are inside them shopping. I don't like most of the things sold there. It's not my gig. Okay. But I tell you what, if you go in and you look at all the if you look at go into the where all the paints are and all the little I'm gonna make it easy. Go into like Walmart, okay, because that's, you know, once you get hooked, then you can go into the craft store. But if you go look at all the little, like, painting tools, there's all these amazing, like, things with wooden handles and blades. And you start thinking, oh, that's what I need. You know, if I cut it down, then take it home and cut it down, the grinder or something.
Right.
And if you need a tool, just make it. And so I was fortunate in being taught that it's like, you don't always buy the special tool. Just make something that, and then you have it and it's yours.
Right. No, that's a good point. That's a great point.
I love making little tools.
Now you just got to make those tools and then sell them because, you know, that's what people are looking for. Hey, if you need a tool for this, you know, people like myself who are lazy and we don't want to make our own tool, we just go, no, somebody's got to make this.
Yeah, yeah,
where's that? But yeah, no, I get that.
I mean, it's not fair that say anybody's lazy. It's, you know, like the.
Oh, no, I am lazy.
Well, don't get me started. I'm the worst. But it's like when you take apart the iPhone, I mean, the first two screws that have to come out are. It's like halfway between a. It's like a notch down from a Torx bit where, you know, Torx has like it's like a 6-point star.
Right.
And the iPhone screw, there's two of them, and it's like I think they call it a pentastar. I mean, it's like 5 points.
Okay.
It's just like, you're such idiots, such jerks. Why would you do that? But every time you order a screen or something, they for free, they usually you will receive that special screwdriver. I've probably got like 100 of them here. But so I wouldn't make something like that. That would be
right.
That would be like nuts. But I, you know, it's any kind of a blade or any kind of little thing like that, that you can usually make something that that I don't know. It just brings me a lot of pleasure to have something I feel like is better than what you can order. And but anyway,
yeah, I know my dad cleaned or worked on trains for years. And his favorite tool that he used for doing all kinds of cleaning, you know, cleaning the inside of the, you know, electronics and stuff like that, was a dentist tool. I don't know where he got this dentist tool at, but wherever he got it at, he had that thing. I mean, literally the whole time I was growing up, he still has that dentist tool for scraping teeth.
It's like a pick?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's got a little angled on the end. It's got two ends. He still uses that thing today.
That, you know what? I find a lot of very useful things the dentist, like when he just looks away, you just grab something. It's probably where your dad got it.
Probably.
You know, you only have to want something more than the person who owns it. That's
where did that tool go? I don't know. Are we done yet?
I don't know. Just add to my bill.
Oh, man. No, but yeah, so I think a lot of times we just look for things in our industry, and I think there's other tools out there that are very useful for doing, you know, what you need to do. And I think that's perfect, especially when it does come to blades, because there's always something you can make that's specific for, you know, doing something that you need to do. And especially when you're dealing with a lot of these plastic cases and stuff like that, you want stuff that's not going to mar the case or, you know, put a gouge in it or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love the toothbrush idea. That's, you know, and plus you keep it sharp, and that's better than the, you know, the spooger I got, which is a great tool, but you know, they wear out.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I kind of like about it. It's got a big thick handle, but it's still flexible. It's not like, you know, you imagine a toothbrush like being rigid. This is actually flexible and it's easy to it's easy to keep a little edge on it. And I use tons of razor blades. I usually buy those like at the 100-pack, and so
okay,
I find myself going through those a lot. Trying to think what else, but yeah, I mean, usually when you buy a component, you know, they send it with a little package of tools,
right?
Screwdrivers and stuff, and so. I don't think there's a whole lot more that I really use here.
Okay. No, that's cool. Yeah, that's a lot of good information on the iPhones and the iPads. And I was curious because it's money that I turn away all the time in not wanting to deal with the different Android tablets. As a matter of fact, I've got a Kindle I've got to fix here of my wife's, and I did order a little jack for it. And when I get to the point where I'm going to do that, you know, maybe then I'll feel a little more comfortable when somebody calls me for a Kindle and says, hey, can you replace the jack? And I can go, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No problem. But like you said, you know, work on your own stuff, not necessarily somebody else's first time. So,
yeah, that's, I think it's a pretty good policy. I'll tell you what, too, is that turning away money, I always kind of feel like I approach it from not turning away money so much as just avoiding an expensive boondoggle. That's the way I see everything that comes in. You know, that's kind of, because a lot of times that is kind of the way it turns out the first few times. And then when you do get it to where it is money coming in, you realize that it's like, I'm not turning away that much money. And one of the first, when it comes to, you said the Kindle, when it comes to approaching like something that I'm not real familiar with or I haven't worked on for a while, the very first thing I look at is how much does a new one cost?
Right.
Because although it's not really my nature, you know, if by the time I got the part to replace, I mean, it's not really my nature to replace something that can be repaired, because I love fixing things, but it's like, when I look at how much the component costs plus my time and what I have to charge the customer, you know, if they can go out and replace it for 20 or 30 bucks more, then it's going to cost me to repair it. And they've already gotten a good year out of it, year and a half.
Right.
Does it really make sense? I mean, what I want somebody to charge me for something that I've already really enjoyed. I've got my life out of it. Good life out of it. And for another 20, 30 bucks, I got to buy a new one. I would probably go buy a new one.
And that's a lot of times that's what I steer my customers towards, because to me, it's like, you know, especially when it comes to laptops, you know, we get down to, and I, you know, have to call them up and say, hey, the motherboard's bad.
Yeah.
And here's what it's going to cost to fix. And, you know, I've had people pay me $300 to replace a motherboard. And now, granted, if you have a $1,000 computer that's fairly new within a few years, then it might make sense. But a lot of times these people are, even if you're spending a couple $100, which is really going to be the minimum, you know, you're not going to get a motherboard generally for less than $100. And, you know, I charge $100 just to do it. That's $200. And I'm like going, you know what? This computer is 4 years old. You've gotten a good use out of it. It's time to replace it. You know, and what I do, so that I still make money and help the customer out at the same time, I send them down to Best Buy or whatever, because I don't have somewhere at this point where I get laptops and stuff from, which is something I need to work on personally. But I send them down to Best Buy. I go down there, buy it. Don't buy the warranty. Don't get any antivirus. Don't do nothing. Bring it to me. I'll transfer all your data over, and I will set this computer up properly, make sure all the updates are done, get all this stuff ready for you, and, you know, give it back to you, and you can just go and do what you like to do on your computer. And really, to me, that's customer service. That's taking care of the customer and still making, you know, a fair amount of profit for doing that and not steering them in the wrong directions necessarily. But sometimes people will still replace. I had a customer, they replaced the motherboard on their computer. It was like $300. 6 months later, it was so gunked up with viruses again that, you know, because I didn't do anything with, you know, I mean, it was brand new operating system, stuff like that. I mean, Microsoft Security Essentials, Malwarebytes, all that kind of stuff was on there. But kids got a hold of it, whatever. Mm-hmm. They ended up going and buying a new computer. So, but she still liked my service. She brought me the computer, and basically she brought me another computer, a new one. And I basically cleaned that one up, set her up on a managed service on that one. And then she brought the second computer, and I basically did a cleanup. Actually, I did a reinstall on that one because it was so bad. I was just like, it's not going to be worth it for me to do anything with it. And there was nothing on there. And she just wanted a second computer for her kids. I reinstalled the operating system. Boom, everything's great to go. You know, and so she had two working computers. You know, that's the money she wanted to spend. But yeah, so it's a tough call. But I always try to steer people in the right direction of, if it's 4 years old or more, it's probably time to replace it.
Yeah.
You know, so that's my general rule.
Too often, it's just like some emotional decision. It's like, folks, it's just numbers. It's just numbers. So you can very easily make the case, hey, this is what's going to cost. I mean, come on, it's just a few bucks more. You're looking, unless it has some intrinsic value beyond money, it's all, it's not an emotional decision. I mean, I've had a couple come in where there was something very unique about it, where there was, you know, some value to it that, you know, beyond, or had some value or worth beyond what you know, what financial value you could place upon it. Where I was like, yeah, let's fix that. But you know, generally it's just numbers. And so
right.
A lot of people, and I think that a lot of people, they have in their mind that these things are much more expensive than they really are. I say, right. You know what? I said, why don't you go take a look? Why don't you go take a look that, I'll run some tests or something, but why don't you go down to Best Buy? I said, take a look around. I said, you might be surprised what you find. I said, every time I go there, I'm surprised by what I find. How many more features are available and how much cheaper these things have gotten. They think they're going to go in, they're going to spend $800 or something. So
right.
That's not the case anymore.
Well, there's a couple things that I do, and I've had a couple different scenarios with customers. I ask the customer, number one, I look at what their computer was that they brought to me. I look at the components on that and figure out what they were doing with it. Then I'll ask them and say, all right, what do you use this for? If they tell me, hey, I'm streaming video, I'm doing Slingbox when I'm down in Florida, this, that, and the other, whatever, that type of thing. Okay, so what I do is I actually look them up a computer at Best Buy. I give them the SKU number and say, go in there, here's the SKU number, have them find you this one, have them show it to you. This is what you need. And this customer who was streaming video and stuff like that and needed this computer to be able to do that, he spent $750. That's what he needed because, right. Quite honestly, a $350 computer is pretty much a piece of crap. Unless you're doing just basic internet surfing, checking email, and that's all you're doing on it, or maybe balancing the books using a program like, Quicken or something like that, that's fine. And I had another customer who came in, and that was the same thing. That's all he was doing on his computer. He would get on the internet every once in a while, not all the time. He would, he had his Quicken in there, and that's what he used for his business. That's how he did his payroll. And that's all he used a computer for, like a couple hours a day. I'm like, hey, I found him a $350 nice computer that was comparable to what he had already had, but better. And then he went down there, bought it, and I set it up. So there's different scenarios for different people.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree.
And you just got to find out what that is by talking to your customer and looking at what the, what equipment they brought you in. So, well, we've talked about a lot of things today. We talked about a lot of computer stuff that you're doing with the different, mobile devices, which I think is really cool. And it's something I really need to look into much better than I do right now. And we've talked about some of your tools that, the made tools and stuff like that. And that's really cool. If you had a business tip to give anybody out there, what would your business tip be? That maybe something you've learned over time that you would go,
yeah, that's
this
easy.
Is what I want to do. Okay.
That's the easy. Never tell a lie.
That's a good one.
It's not always easy, but always tell the truth. Second, do your best. Nobody expects you to be perfect. Nobody expects you to get everything right all the time. Okay. So, and if you say you're going to do it. Okay. So, if you can do those three things, I can't guarantee you success out of the gate, but I can guarantee if you do those three things and you're persistent, I can guarantee you will be successful eventually. And you eventually have more success than you can handle on your own. Just always try, always do your best to tell the truth. Always do the best to do what you say you're going to do, and just persistently do give it what you got. Every day you get up, just give it all you got. It doesn't matter what you're doing in this life. If you do those three things, you will find success.
Absolutely.
That's not typical business advice, but I think that's that's something that works in life and it just kind of translates into business. Because we're just working with people. We're just doing, right. Business tends to be more formal. And there tends to be more stuff, you know, written down, you know, promises, guarantees. It has to be all laid out. But look, I mean, these are just things, these are relationships we're building with people. And so there's slightly different rules than you have with the relationships that you're having with people in your personal life. But look, I mean, it's just all about working with people and just treating people the way you'd want to be treated. That's
it. Absolutely. I agree. That's great business advice. And you're right. It's not typical in business, but I think in the customer service type business that we're in, that is, customer service is king. I've said that many, many times, and I'll say it again, because it is very important to treat the customers right and look out for the customer's best interest. And I be honest, because sometimes you gotta tell them, hey, this is the deal. And people really appreciate that when you let them know what the real deal is, not try to sugarcoat it, not try to make it what it's not, but you know, just let them know, hey, here's what it is. Here's what's going on.
Or, hey, I screwed this up. This is my fault.
Yep.
You know, that, you know, it, don't tell something, don't make up a story. It's only going to come back and bite you. So I hear.
Will come back.
No, it's like you have kids. It's like you watch a lie and it just snowballs into like the biggest. It's comical how big a lie can get. It's just tell them, like this is what I and then make it right.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. Because you know what? Nobody ever treats anybody like that. So if you screw up, make it right. It's you can turn anything into a good thing. Somebody might actually go away and never call you again and hate you for the rest of their lives. But if you make it right, you know what? They won't tell the world. They won't make a huge thing of it. I mean, that's like worst case scenario. You might actually turn them into the best customer and an advertising agent like ever.
Right.
But just make it right. You know, nobody's perfect. You're going to make mistakes. Just own up to them and make it right. It's actually that easy.
Yep.
It doesn't really feel like it. It doesn't feel like at the time, but it's actually that easy.
Well, it's easier to tell the truth than it is to tell a lie, because you got to keep up with your lies.
Oh, lies are tough. Things happen. And so that's my business advice. It was not given to you freely. If you tend to, I will be accepting for whatever value that you place on it, I will be accepting, checks over time the rest of your life. Just send me whatever value you place on that advice. You can just send that to me.
Awesome. Well, Tim, hey, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with us today. It's been a load full of information, and I really
been a load. All right.
Well, when you put it that way,
actually, no, it's gosh, you know, I love PodDots. I mean, I've been around since the beginning, but nobody ever kind of really knew me for like years, and I just didn't. It took a lot to get me come out of my shell a little bit, and now everybody's trying to stick me back in the shell. They lured me too far out, but PodNuts gave so much to me for so long. Just having the opportunity to give back in any capacity is just—it's really an honor to me. So I appreciate the opportunity to come on. Jeff, you're killing it, man. Keep it up, buddy. We love having you here.
I appreciate it. I that's the feedback I like, because if it's helping people out, that's really what it's all about. And it, like you said, it is about giving back, and that's really what I want to do. Hey, if people want to get in contact with you, what's the best way?
Yeah, the best way is I'm Tim Bauermeister on G+.
Okay.
You can. I love G+. I'm totally like. Well, I love the line of communication. I don't know that I really love it, but it's I've really kind of gotten hooked into it, and it's such a universal thing. It ties together so many different things for me. Yeah, just Tim Bauermeister on G+. Hit me up there. It's great. I love it.
Very good. All right. And you guys, you can find me over at Google+ at Jeffrey Hallish, or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, please email us at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. Go ahead.
Find me on the Geeksters too, man.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yeah, let's plug that again.
Yeah, absolutely, buddy. That's here on the PodNuts Network. We roll live Tuesdays at 6 between 6:30 and 7 Eastern time. Our fearless host, Martin, is East Coast, so he always says 3:30. Yeah, nobody really does that. 6:30 Eastern, of course, 6:37 Eastern, or 3:34 Pacific, or whatever crazy time zone that is. And please join us live. It's awesome. We have a great chat going. We have video. And of course, if you can't do it live, man, check out the Geeksters. You can download the MP3s.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you guys want to check that out live, actually, that's over at, on Tuesdays, every Tuesday over at www.podnuts.com/live. And you can check it out there. There's a chat room you can get involved in and, pester these guys, ask them a lot of questions, which I do when I'm not working, which is a lot of fun. And, we had a great time on the show last week, and definitely check that show out. My name is Jeff Halish. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live. Hope you guys can come check that out. And then also, if you guys want to help support the Podnuts Network, the next time you're shopping in Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. Come check out some of the other podcasts on the Podnuts Network, like Android App Addicts. Each show will give you some good apps to try on your phone or tablet. If you have an Android device and aren't listening to this show, you are missing out. Or if you're interested in learning how to do remote support, check out the Remote Support Show. If you want to laugh and have a good time hearing about tech, listen to the Geeksters. If you want to learn about Linux so that even you can understand, then check out Linux for the Rest of Us. And if you're into all things server-related, at work or for fun, check out The Server Show. In a market for a new phone? Check out Mobile Dynasty to get all the latest information about your mobile technology. Take your health to the next level and check out Health Nuts. Come check out these shows and more over at podnuts.com. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.